Hey, yep, ready.
Hi.
We're here. This is The Same Drugs with Megan Murphy. I'm Megan Murphy.
And I'm Laura McNally.
Is that the first time we've ever remembered to do that?
Yes, it is. Congratulations. We have made it. This is the big time, guys.
We are professional. It only took us, what, five and a half months?
If you don't sign up for Patreon now, I don't know what's going to get you.
What more can we do to get you to support our work? We remembered to tell you the name of the show and also our names.
Oh my god. I'm like quickly zipping up my jacket because I'm like, I don't think this top is going to cover anything. Look at that. I'm professionally dressed. We did an intro. Sign up for Patreon. It's only $5 and you can hear so many more interesting stories.
Please do support The Same Drugs on Patreon.
That's your pitch.
Oh, I'm so bad at pitching. This is why I'm like a bad capitalist. I really don't know how to ask for money. It makes me so uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People who
have never had much money are not good at like asking for money and like making value propositions and all the shit that like rich people are always talking about. So
yeah,
it's comfortable for them. It's not comfortable for us.
No. You look kind of like you're wearing like maybe a ski jacket or like a, like it looks like outdoorsy, like maybe you're going to get on a boat into the ocean or climb up a mountain.
Huh. It's actually just like a normal, it's like a fashion jacket.
Oh, so, I mean, it looks nice. It looks like a nice jacket. It just looked like a bit, it looks outdoorsy a bit.
It's my own.
I mean, I guess that's the whole point of jackets is to wear them outdoors.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to wear it, but it's like too cold, so I got to wear something.
Is this the flakiest YouTube show on the entire internet?
Is it?
No, I'm sure it's not. It's like I was listening to Blocked and Reported today, not to advertise another podcast, or I guess these are our competitors because they keep like we keep crossing over on all our topics with them. And I was listening today, and there's like they like practically scooped us. So,
in our defense,
we've been planning this show all week in the show notes, and then last night I posted the link to our live stream that we were going to talk about everybody who got fired this week, and that was literally what their podcast was about. So Katie and Jesse have clearly hacked into my laptop and have started stealing ideas from our Google Doc.
This is the idea behind The Same Drugs, though. Like, we're all dealing with the same kind of one consciousness, Megan, one love, you know? When you get there, you.
Okay, so welcome everyone to the show. How's your week been, Laura? First of all, just let's do like a quick check-in.
Oh, you know, pretty good. I don't know. I've not really looked at the internet, to be honest, so it's been pretty good. How about you?
I've only looked at the internet.
How did that go?
I mean, it's very exciting. You haven't looked at the... Oh, dude, this is like... Internet week. I mean, it feels like every week is internet week these days, especially ever since COVID. It seems like the internet is just nuts. Like, we can't even keep up with everything. As you probably noticed, the list of things to talk about just grows and grows and grows.
Yes.
The first thing that happened, if we want to jump right in, which is very uncharacteristic of us, so sorry to throw everyone off.
Switching it up, you know, keep people on their toes.
To talk about manicures for a half an hour. I mean, I have one.
Oh, that looks good.
Thank you.
That looks good. I'm jealous.
Like, okay, so I feel like the major internet thing that happened this week was J.K. Rowling.
Oh, yeah.
Which I'm sure you followed.
I caught wind. Yes.
Yeah, you got wind. the biggest cancellation of the week. So when she posted about, I'm not sure.
Start from the beginning.
Okay. So a lot of our listeners probably know, but in case they don't. So I think on Saturday she posted a tweet. She posted a link to an article that referred to women as people who menstruate. And she tweeted like kind of a joke alongside it being like, oh, I thought people who menstruate used to be called something. What was it? I can't remember. Obviously sort of joking about this attempt to, I mean, de-sex, I suppose. I was going to say de-gender, but it's not about gender. It's about sex. De-sex the term menstruation, which has been like a larger trend over the past few years, where even, you know, organizations like Planned Parenthood and stuff like that have started calling women pregnant people and menstruators. And, you know, like I wrote an article about that back in 2016. So like, you know, 4 years ago. And that article actually, which was specifically criticizing language used by Planned Parenthood and the term menstruators and people and pregnant people instead of pregnant women, was the one that led to my leaving rabble.ca, which is where I was working at the time. It was part-time. I was working part-time as an editor. But I, you know, and I published my work from Feminist Current there, my articles, my podcast, and so on and so forth. So I published this article about menstruators on my website, Feminist Current, and also published it at Rabble. One of the editors there double-checked, published it, and it was up for like 7 hours, and then it disappeared. And nobody contacted me or told me that it was taken down. I just noticed it wasn't up, and so I emailed my editor colleagues and was like, hey, what's going on? My article has disappeared. And nobody responded to me. And I kind of kept at it, and eventually the publisher responded, I believe, and told me that it was removed by one of the editors. They didn't specify who, because of transphobic language. And I don't believe there was any transphobic language in the article. It was just pointing out that women are female and that only females can menstruate and get pregnant and have babies. Which is transphobic now. So in any case, so she tweeted this article, and, you know, I think it was pretty obvious what she was saying, which is that, you know, women's kind of being woman, the word woman itself is being erased from our vocabulary. And it's interesting when we think about all this, like, gender identity stuff, because it really does almost entirely affect women. Like, it doesn't really seem to affect men that much. Like, we don't hear the word man being neutralized in the same way that woman is. So it really seems difficult to deny that it's, like, erasing women. But in any case, so there was immediate backlash to her. Everybody called her, like, a TERF. They called her evil. They called her a bitch. They called her a cunt. They called her scum. I saw there's a post on Medium that sort of rounds up the endless insults and vitriol that, you know, she was subjected to. And she had followed up this tweet by defending herself and saying, like, she said, the idea that women like me, who've been empathetic to trans people for decades, feeling kinship because they're vulnerable in the same way as women, i.e. to male violence, hate trans people because they think sex is real and has lived consequences, is a nonsense. And then she went on to say, if sex isn't real, there is no same-sex attraction. If sex isn't real, the lived reality of women globally is erased. I know and love trans people, but erasing the concept of sex removes the ability of many to meaningfully discuss their lives. It isn't hate to speak the truth. So, you know, she definitely didn't say anything hateful at all. And what she said, I thought was, you know, like, I almost thought it was, like, too nice. It's like, you know, stop being so defensive. Like, you're not saying anything wrong. Like, you're not saying anything against trans people. You know, there's no reason to add all these, you know, like, I love trans people. I don't hate trans people. I don't want people to be vulnerable. I don't want people to be harmed. You know, like, I support trans rights.
Right.
I get why people do that, but it just doesn't work. Like, I sort of feel like, okay, you haven't dealt with these people enough to know that there's nothing that you can say.
Yeah.
To protect yourself, and there's no level of like politeness that will ever make it okay to say anything against this ideology and this doctrine.
Mm-hmm. What you're talking about is someone starting to go down the road. We talked a few weeks ago about when you're dealing with someone who is manipulative or abusive towards you, and if you start going down the road of jading them, which means justifying, arguing, defending, or explaining, then you're feeding into their position. So anytime you give them ground, they're going to take that ground up. And so that's like why it's so important when you're dealing with someone that's manipulative or abusive or trying to, you know, twist a situation, you don't give them anything. Because the minute you do, that's going to be taken and used against you. And of course, that's what it's done. Like, she's made her position statement known. And that is going to fuel the fire so much more.
Right.
Because she's given people supply. She's given people fuel. She's given more. She's added to it.
Yeah, I know. I feel like, I think we've talked about this in other episodes, maybe, but I mean, my position is, like, never apologize.
Mm-hmm.
Unless you're genuinely sorry, you know, unless, like, you know, don't, not, I mean, not, she didn't apologize, but it's sort of that, like, it's that defensive position. Like, if you're not doing anything wrong, then you don't need to be defensive.
You don't have to say, I love trans people. I mean, if your position in the world is that you are, I mean, she's not a conservative. She's not like a right wing Trump voting, you know, kick out all immigrants. I hate people of color. I hate gay people. She's a ethical, moral, socially conscious, and genuinely empathetic woman.
I mean, she's a major liberal. Yeah. I mean, she's been really clear about like supporting LGBT rights and everything else. But so there was backlash, and you know, I'll be totally honest that at the time I was sort of like, not that I didn't really get what was such a big deal about her tweets, because people online were going crazy and they were like, oh my God, she's a hero. No. And I was like, oh, whatever. Like, she's not saying anything that all the rest of us aren't saying and haven't said a million times over. And she hasn't really advanced any particularly interesting or new analysis. And I mean, it's good for her to, you know, say these things, because we want to normalize it. But at the same time, I was like, I don't really care. Like, I'm not more interested in what famous people say than what, you know, an intellectual might say, or even a regular woman, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think people kind of get a bit starstruck around those things. And yes. J.K. Rowling is different than just some actress spouting off about, you know, Black Lives Matter, because I think actors and actresses are particularly irrelevant and stupid. And this is a writer, and she's a good writer, and she's obviously an intelligent person. So I do put her in a sort of different category. But anyway, that's like an aside. Mm. And I was like, well, I want to wait and see what happens. Like, is she gonna backtrack? Is she going to apologize? Is she going to do what, you know, she did in the past, which was to say, you know, she was caught liking a tweet that was deemed transphobic, and it hit the press, and she excused it by saying, her representative or whatever said, oh, she had a middle-aged moment. Like, it was just an accident.
I feel like I read that actually. And it was something like, I, I was doing research and collecting certain tweets, and I was using some save function, and I accidentally hit the like instead of the save. I wasn't meaning to hit the like. Who cares? I mean, is this seriously the way we're living right now, where if you hit a like button, your whole world blows up? Like, get the fuck out of here. I mean, seriously.
Don't let people get away with that. Like, don't apologize for liking a tweet. You're allowed to like whatever you want.
Like, or explaining it, like, you need a reason why as you liked this tweet. Oh, I have a good reason. It was accidental. I'm trying to save things in a special folder, and the folder is right near the like button, and there, and then, just fuck it off. No, I'm not apologizing. You're stalking my tweets. That's your problem. Finished.
Yeah, don't be a creep. So I was wondering what would happen, and I was hoping that she would sort of move forward with an analysis. And what I was really hoping for was that she would stand up for women, you know, like, because one of the things that I feel most frustrated about is that, you know, those of us who do speak about these issues are subjected to like an incredible level of hate and vitriol, and it's really awful, you know. It's stressful, and it's sad, and it's isolating, and you know, you lose friends, like women lose jobs, and you just kind of feel like you're fighting the world, and people get to treat you like you are hateful because other people aren't standing up and saying it too. Like, I'm always sort of desperately wanting more people to stand up and be like, no, like, Megan's right, or no, like, Julie or Posey or Sheila or Janice or whoever it is, like, they're right. They're not saying anything offensive. And we need to stand up for women. Like, and it's not okay for you to threaten a woman or tell a woman to suck your lady cock because she says women are adult human female. Like, this is absolutely unacceptable. You're not allowed to stand out. I mean, you are allowed, but like, you know, you should be criticized. You're standing outside an event that's absolutely not hateful, holding a guillotine saying TERFs and SWERFs step right up. Like, you're allied with activists who are shoving disemboweled skunks in the mail slot of a rape crisis center storefront. Like, none of this is acceptable. It's not acceptable to speak about women this way. It's not acceptable, you know, and it shouldn't be acceptable to my friends or people who know me to sit around and hear their friends say horrid things about me and say that I'm hateful and that they shouldn't, you know, be my friend or be around me or whatever. None of this is okay. Mm. So what I was wanting was for her to stand up and stand with us and not just sort of say something fairly innocuous and not remind everybody that, you know, thousands of other women around the world have been trying to say this and being silenced and threatened and punched and ostracized and blacklisted over it.
I think there's a couple of things. One thing I will say is that it seems as though for a lot of people, they're really just trying to not kind of stick their head out. So that's why a lot of people, when dealing with conversations like this, and I've certainly been in situations like this where the topic of gender identity comes up and they're trying to take a very clear, like, very clear progressive position. And I'm like, well, it's actually more complicated than that. And I don't have the time to walk you through what gender identity is doing to legislation, to various women's spaces and groups around the world. All I'm going to say is it's more complicated than what you think. But the other thing is that I get the sense that a lot of people who are throwing their weight behind the Daniel Radcliffe kind of argument of like, yes, like, we're standing up for trans people and trans lives matter, and we're definitely in the right here, and just throw all of our weight into this argument. They have no skin in the game. Like, it's nothing to them. They're wealthy. They're effectively safeguarded. There's a full safety net for them. So they're basically just throwing their weight behind something that is going to make them look good. It's not that they've engaged with the issue. It's not that they're particularly interested in the issue. I think it's just something they can throw their brand into. It looks good. And then what you get, of course, is the fallout, like where you see fallout with the Black Lives Matter movement, and all of these people are, you know, being affected by the rioting, and their housing's ruined and their businesses are ruined. And it's like, well, that doesn't matter. We're talking about the hot button topic. Trans lives matter. That's the hot button topic. Don't worry about like women and girls in sports or prison, or that's not cool. The hot button topic is trans lives matter. And they just dismiss everything else.
Yeah. And I mean, just, yeah. So to go on from there, so what I was really happy about was that, you know, on, I think it was just yesterday, she, J.K. Rowling, published this whole piece. So she sort of almost did like what I was hoping she would do, which was to elaborate and be really specific about her analysis. And she did. And it was a really good piece. I don't know if you read it, but
also the thing she tweeted, which was like a letter on her website.
Yeah, yeah. So she posted a pretty long essay on her website explaining why she had started to speak out about this issue. And she revealed that she was a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault, and that she, you know, was hoping that the world her girls would grow up in would be better than the one she grew up in. And she felt not only was it not better, but that it was worse, you know, that the misogyny and sexism that girls are subjected to today growing up in this world is even worse than it was in the 80s or whatever. And I think that's true. I mean, she didn't say this particularly, but if you look at porn culture, if you look at what girls and boys are exposed to at a very young age, it's really horrific. You know, it's obviously misogynistic, it's degrading, it's violent, it's extremely racist. And then there's this gender identity trans thing where girls who in the past, girls like me, like pre-puberty, I wanted to look like a boy. It didn't occur to me that I wanted to be a boy. I just wanted to have short hair, and I hated pink, and I didn't want to wear frilly dresses, and I wanted to play with the boys, and I wanted to play with blocks and trucks instead of like with the girls. And like, I didn't like girly things, you know. I was sort of rebelling against girl culture, I guess. And then eventually I went through puberty and decided I wanted boys to like me. But but you know, that today, if you're one of those girls, then you're trans, you're actually a boy. You're not really a girl. And that's so sexist. Like, it's so sexist to tell girls that in order for them to be female, in order for them to be girls, they have to like wear frilly pink dresses and to be polite and accommodating and not to play with boys' toys.
Did J.K. Rowling go into some of the issues around that? Because it was a really long letter, right? So did she go into like the stats or the issues that are happening around this?
Yeah. Yeah. Trend? She talked about that. And I think she said, you know, when she was a kid, she felt sort of like, you know, she felt like she didn't have a feminine brain. So she thought, you know, maybe there was something wrong with her, but there was no trans solution. So she just eventually discovered, you know, other women writers and a women's culture that was feminist, essentially, that pushed back against those gender stereotypes. So she realized, you know, like, I can be a girl, I can be a woman in this world without being, you know, perfectly within the feminine category. Yeah. And it was a very nice, like, open, vulnerable, heartfelt essay that was also very clear and that expressed very clear concerns about the harm being done to girls who are being transed now. You know, the statistics have reversed, whereas in the past it was mostly men transitioning to become women, and now it's far more girls who are transitioning to become boys. Mm-hmm. And so she publishes that, and the vitriol just went like insane. Like, I mentioned this Medium post where this woman compiled all these tweets that were sent to her, and it's just endless, and it's disgusting. You know, like, it's like a million cunts, a million hag, a million bitch, like a million turfs, obviously transphobic, and then like suck a dick and choke on it, like just endless, just completely misogynistic, completely hateful. And a lot of celebrities and kind of famous people spoke out and said, don't worry, we love trans people. We don't know what's wrong with her. Hopefully she'll educate herself. Like, just so condescending. Like, it's like, yeah, she's the stupid one. She's clearly a very intelligent woman.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You don't know anything more than she does. Yeah, exactly. Like, she couldn't possibly actually think this if she knew anything. It's like, you clearly didn't read her essay. Like, you have no right to criticize her if you're not going to respond to the actual arguments that she's making, and none of them did.
I love when people go down that path. It seems to be kind of the first line of defense, is that, like, you need to educate yourself, and then they start, like, twisting pretzels trying to prove this new thing, which is, like, sex is a spectrum. Like, it's like, we know this new thing now, that sex is a spectrum, and it's, like, totally speculative. It's not validated by the data. It doesn't take much of a kind of background in research to understand that they're basically just picking outliers and anomalies and arranging them to appear as a spectrum where they're not. It's not like a unified continuum. It's actually a range of things related to sex. And they've put them all together and gone, see, it's a spectrum. That's not how spectrums work. But good try.
Yeah. And I mean, and then, like, on top of all this vitriol, like, fucking Daniel Radcliffe, like, you know, I'm not a fan of telling people to shut up. Like, I don't like this, like, this is about women, men need to shut up. Like, this is about black people, white people need to shut up. Like, I kind of think anybody should be able to speak. Mm-hmm. But, you know, why the fuck are you talking Daniel Radcliffe? Like, why, you know, he writes this boring little note. It's not even an essay for the Trevor Project, you know, saying that
what's
he just...
What's the Trevor Project?
I think it's like a gay rights group, or maybe LGBT. I thought it was specific to gay... Okay, I think it's about LGBTQ youth, actually. Okay. So, you know, an advocacy organization. I think they have, like, a helpline for LGBT kids who are suicidal and things like that. So, you know, he says, while Joe is unquestionably responsible for the course my life has taken, as someone who has been honored to work with and continues to contribute to the Trevor Project for the past decade, and just as a human being, I feel compelled to say something at this moment. Mm-hmm. And what he feels compelled to say is, transgender women are women. Any statement to the contrary erases the identity and dignity of transgender people and goes against all advice given by professional healthcare associations who have far more expertise on this subject matter than either Joe or I. And he goes on and on and talks about learning to be a better ally and, you know, love everyone, oppression of vulnerable groups, blah, 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 blah. Like, he completely erases everything that she said. You know, he doesn't address any of her comments about what it's like to grow up a girl or be a woman in this world, and about how this transing is impacting girls and impacting lesbians. Mm-hmm. He just says a whole bunch of nothing to distance himself from her, to make himself look good. And somebody mentioned in the comments, I just wanted to mention also, Posey did a video responding to Daniel Radcliffe's statement that is very good. So you can watch that on YouTube also. But, you know, like, why are you compelled to respond? And why are you compelled to, you know, throw her totally under the bus to these people Like, why didn't you say anything about the misogyny? Like, why does nobody who feels compelled to speak out say anything about the grotesque misogyny and threats that are being hurled at J.K. Rowling or at any of us? Like, it's just as though it doesn't even exist. And, you know, silence isn't violence, but if you feel compelled to speak, like, why is it that you feel compelled to speak in defense of someone who isn't under attack? You know, transgender people were not being attacked by J.K. Rowling, and they're not being attacked by any of us.
I'm just going to say what I think is happening is not Daniel Radcliffe pursuing a position that clarifies his knowledge or interest in transgender rights. I think he's just pursuing the position that he is kind of righteous in comparison to someone else. Like, I don't think this has much to do with the issue, because like you said, there is no substance to what he's said. There is no, what are the key issues that he's raised and addressed and kind of given evidence around? It sounds like nothing. It sounds like the usual hot air, like politician kind of statement, like, I believe people should have rights and I am a good person. Like, yay, great job. That's what everyone believes. We're having an adult discussion here, which is a bit more complicated. But congrats.
Thank you for your contributions, Danny.
The hero that we all needed.
Brave. Brave. Brilliant. Stunning. I mean, it's so funny what passes for political these days. I mean, we could get into this for the entire episode and probably will, but it's, and I think that was actually one of the topics that we wanted to cover, so maybe we can get into it later, around like who gets to be viewed as like radical and pushing back against the man when they literally are the man. So, I mean, and also, so I just also wanted to mention, like, before we move on, so Emma Watson also tweeted in response saying, trans people are who they say they are and deserve to live their lives without being constantly questioned or told they aren't who they say they are. So, I mean,
what did J.K. Rowling say that negated any of that? She has said that she believes that transgender people deserve equal rights, and she's concerned about how women's rights are being overrun in particular areas with regard to specific issues. She hasn't said, I don't believe transgender people have rights or should have rights. So why is this the defense? They're responding to something she never said.
Yeah, well, and I mean, also, like, it's odd to say, I mean, she doesn't, it's very confusing because she really doesn't say anything at all. Like, trans people are who they say they are. Like, what does that mean? Like, you know, and deserve to live their lives without being constantly questioned or told who they aren't who they say they are. But, like, why? Like, why, you know, why are we just to believe every single person who says they're blank? I mean, what about Rachel Dolezal?
I mean,
like, she says she's black. Are we to believe that she's black? Most people don't believe that she's black.
No, and I mean, the development of an identity is a two-way process. So it's about, you know, you have your perception of my identity, and it's not something I can change in your mind. It's something that we can negotiate and we can like move hopefully into a way that works for both of us. So identities are negotiated, but I don't see what J.K. Rowling is saying that's in any way dismissing the notion that you can decide your identity. Sure, decide your identity. And women can have sex-based rights. Those two things must live in harmony. There must be a way. Otherwise, how do we move forward?
And why don't we get to say who we are? You know, why can't we say, like, I'm a woman, and being a woman means being female.
Because like, you're cis and no one cares.
Yeah, why are we told all the time that we're cis? And that because we're cis women, we should have to sit down and shut up and also suck a dick.
I don't know.
Anyway,
the thing that strikes me, though, is a lot of people who put forward arguments around gender nonconformity, I'll use that as the umbrella, you know, people who deal with gender nonconformity, you know, suffer immensely. They feel that they don't belong. They feel all these things around gender. And I'm like, everybody does. And we actually all find ways to cope with that. For some people, it's pure assimilation into, you know, what is a man and what is a woman. But most of us, we just negotiate those pressures around what we're told it means to be male or female. We all deal with the discomfort of the roles within the society that we're born into. And it's totally dependent on your cultural background. But most people have quite a degree of discomfort, I would say, around the social norms associated with their sex role. It is the way we live as humans.
I feel like my whole life I've been treated as though I'm being a woman wrong. Like, I feel like that now. It's true. Like, it's
you can never do it right. That's the point of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why. I mean, that was one of the benefits of finding feminism. I mean, I was a feminist from the time I was like a kid, from like when I was like, you know, 10 or 11 or something like that. But, you know, I remember struggling when I was a young woman to, like, I wanted to be like the other girls that I saw that seemed to be able to fit properly. And I never really could. So you just always kind of feel like you're trying to be someone you're not. And like, why can't I just do this naturally? And even now, I mean, I don't want to do it naturally because I like myself, but like, you know, I've had plenty of like boyfriends and men in my life who sort of like, this is a terrible example. This is the first thing that popped into my head. Look at me like a weirdo when I burp.
Right, you go straight out.
You know, like, I don't think I behave in a very feminine way. Like, I say what I think, and now it's even worse because, like, I'm out in public saying what I think all the time, and women aren't supposed to do that, and it makes men really, a lot of men, it makes them really uncomfortable. I mean, a lot of men, I think, sort of, like, idolize me because of it, but don't realize what that's actually like when it comes to being in a real relationship with me because I keep saying what I think in those relationships also.
But you know,
like, it's like, oh, you're supposed to be polite and you're not supposed to make people uncomfortable and you're not supposed to piss people off. And it makes things uncomfortable for them and their friends. And, you know, even, you know, for my female friends, I feel like I get that too. Like, it's like, mm-hmm. oh, you're not supposed to have uncomfortable opinions. We're supposed mm-hmm. to all like make everybody else feel comfortable all the time. Like, men seem to be able to have political arguments, you know, and I spend a lot of time with my male friends and I get into these political arguments and get just as like intense as they do. But that mm-hmm. doesn't happen with my female friends. And I feel like sometimes men look at me like I'm being inappropriate when I get sort of like,
yeah,
you know.
But don't you reckon as well, like, the older you get, the more you realize that those people who did perform, to use that word, perform femininity correctly, they were faking it too. Like, to a degree, yeah. We're all faking these various roles. None of us are fully conforming. We're all working it out. We're all in this process of negotiating what we feel comfortable with in a society that tells us to be a certain way. Some people are great at faking. Some people are terrible at faking. But we're all in various degrees of discomfort and feeling like we don't really fit. Like, the feeling of not belonging is universal to all humans. It's something that everyone struggles with. But now we've got this term and it's like, oh, but it's gender non-conforming people that don't belong. And it's like, no, all people feel like they don't belong. Like, all people.
Yes.
Now they've given a name to a subset of those people. But I guarantee you that we all share similar feelings as that subset that we've decided are different.
Yes, exactly. And I mean, this is sort of one of the main things that I've kept trying to explain around this gender identity thing is that, you know, and that sort of one of my critiques of what J.K. Rowling wrote was that she sort of left this out, but it's fine. She doesn't have to cover everything. She's not the only person in the world. Lots of people are talking about this, obviously, so we can all offer different aspects of the analysis. But, like, you know, there's that, that's why I take issue with the idea of transgenderism itself, like the idea that you could be born in the wrong body or because you don't identify with these gender roles and gender categories, there's something wrong with you and you need to fix it because there's nothing wrong with you. Like you said, like it's like we all feel like that. Nobody feels like they fit perfectly within the category of femininity or masculinity. And that's also why the term cis is so insulting, of course, because it implies that all women who don't identify as trans identify really strongly and clearly with femininity and don't question it, and it doesn't make them feel uncomfortable or like they're putting on some costume when they go out of the house because, you know, they don't feel comfortable in heels and pantyhose and lingerie and all this shit, right?
I remember when I was first trying to get my bearings around this debate, like 5 or 10 years ago. So I went and read some of the old school literature from the kind of OG authors like Judith Butler and Raewyn Connell, and some of the books that were looking at how we measure and understand femininity and masculinity. And this was kind of pre-gender identity days. And like the scales of measurement they used to assess whether someone was feminine identifying or masculine, not they didn't say identifying, but like they were trying to understand if femininity and masculinity existed in the brain. And they would ask, like, do you like dolls? Do you like sewing? Do you like trucks? Like they had the most ridiculously basic explanations of what constituted masculinity and femininity. And that's the kind of undercurrent. Those are some of the like core foundational perspectives that shape the dialogue today in academia, that there's this thing called masculinity and femininity, despite the fact it's never been found in any research. We're still all talking about it as though it's real.
Yeah, I mean, it's a tough one because it's sort of like, you know, I guess like, you know, you can talk about femininity and masculinity because those words do mean something. Like we know what we're talking about when we say femininity or masculinity. It's just that those categories are just not in any way rigid. And I feel frustrated because I feel like even the sex researchers get it wrong all the time and mix up sex and gender. And these are the people who are supposed to be studying sex differences, and they don't seem to understand that what we're talking about, you know, we meaning women and feminists who are critical of gender identity ideology, you know, we're just talking about an idea. We're talking about personality traits versus biological sex versus the body and chromosomes and things like that. And they insist, you know, there is a feminine brain and there is a masculine brain. And it's like, no, you're talking about like a male brain and a male body, which is different in some ways than the female brain. Like it's not true to say that there are no differences. There's no inherent differences between men and women and that there aren't differences in the brain. There are.
Right.
But to call it masculinity and femininity isn't very useful to me because those words are so much associated with these stereotypes that are just not applicable to most people.
Exactly. And like, so women, generally speaking, in personality tests, one of the big things that men and women differ on is agreeableness. And that's kind of one of the core personality constructs from the Big Five. And so women tend to be slightly more agreeable. And there is a whole debate how much of that is socialized versus hormonal versus neurobiological. But at the core of it, it's like you can really understand why women give up so much ground and women forfeit so many boundaries to other people's comfort when inherently there is something in us that makes us want to be more agreeable, and we are essentially not conforming with our gender to not be agreeable, because there's something in us that is telling us we should be agreeable. There, you know, it's kind of hardwired into us, so to speak. Like, you should be more agreeable. You feel more guilt when you're not agreeable, where men probably don't feel as much guilt when they're being disagreeable. So, you know, in a sense, like you said, you argue with people more frequently, you challenge people more frequently, you debate men. And those are essentially things that go against the idea of femininity. You're not conforming. You're not conforming, right. Megan. Congrats. Yeah.
You get loud, you get drunk, you burp a lot, you yell at people. It's just not very ladylike.
It's also, but do it's you fun. Think maybe a class thing? It's just like, it's like when you're not middle to upper class, you also just don't care. Like, when you live in the real world, it's just like, we don't have time for that shit. Like, I don't have time to have all these theoretical airy-fairy discussions. And that's why I said to you before, I feel like some of the celebrities and people who have lots of money and they're heads of corporations and they're, oh, yes, I would like to sit down and have a theoretical and intellectual discussion about the notion of gender identity. And they're just kind of mentally masturbating. They're not doing anything. Because they don't live in the real world where shit is actually happening. They live in like this fantasy land where it's like, oh, maybe I'll give 10 grand to them, or I'll give 10 grand to them, and I'll just go with whatever like makes my brand look good or makes my friends think I'm good. It's all just a kind of circle jerk for them.
I do think that actually middle and upper class, I think upper class people in particular, are much better at faking it than working class people are. Like, I feel like working class people didn't get that same training. And so it's hard also to fit in circles of rich people, just as it's hard to, you know, because you didn't learn that kind of, I don't know, I guess the classy femininity that rich girls learn, and that, you know, rich men learn their own forms of behavior and socializing in those cultures also.
Etiquette and shit.
Like, I feel like, you know, if you do grow up working class, you sort of have less like class, and you're sort of less you're less well trained in proper femininity in some ways. I mean, some people might challenge me on that, but I feel like that's my experience, and I sort of have always related better to working class people also.
I feel that might be part of the reason why those people enjoy this conversation, because it's a doorway for them to, oh, like, all of these roles and all this bullshit they've taken on through socialization of like, you need to mind your P's and Q's, and ladies sit with their legs closed, and you act like this in close company, and you act like this around family and this with business associates, and we have high tea and we do all this shit. And I feel like maybe for them it's like, oh, gender nonconformity, is that a doorway into me perhaps exploring this hidden part of my identity that I've repressed because of the way I was raised in the kind of middle upper class society? And it's like, or you could just join the real world where you don't have to act like a fake fuck all the time. Like, maybe you don't have to make it a theoretical conversation. You can just go and hang out with some real people, volunteer at a fucking shelter, like, go to the pub. You don't have to turn it into this like fancy, I'm having an intellectual discourse. Just go hang out with people, and you might feel some of that pressure to conform is released. Like, I don't think it, I think we're complicating some of the things that people think is gender roles and sex-based like conformity. I think people are complicating it more than they need to, just by the way that they've been raised.
Yeah, I definitely think some people are complicating it much more than they need to, because they want to sound not only politically correct and progressive and not hateful, but they also want to sound intellectual. So
yes,
they turn it into this kind of like academic jargony conversation that no one understands, including themselves. So needless to say, J.K. Rowling is being like canceled big time, and I assume she's probably under a lot of stress right now. Mm. I mean, the amount of companies that spoke out against her, like
really?
The Body Shop. The Body Shop.
It's why? Like,
your entire customer base is women, you idiots. Like, what did they say? They said something very condescending. Hold on, I'm just going to try to find it online, actually, because it was really irritating. So the Body Shop, like, shut the fuck up, the Body Shop. You sell soap. Hey, JK Rowling, here's something we made earlier. We thought you might like one. We've also popped in a vegan bath bomb and a copy of Trans Rights by Paisley Kura for you to read in the bath. And it's a photo of this bag saying, it's bloody natural. And then it says, hashtag drop the P word to end period shame. It's like, I don't know what this is like teaching her about menstruation. I mean, she knows what a fucking period is. And so,
wait, drop the P word. What does that mean? Like, you should say it or you should not say it?
I guess they're saying, like, you should not say it. I've never heard of this campaign before, so clearly it didn't do very well, the Body Shop. But I guess if it's hashtag drop the P word, they're asking people to drop the word period. Like, I don't know what. Maybe they want people to say menstruation instead. And I guess they want people to refer to women as menstruators.
But, you know, like, a lot of people, when they say drop, it means, like, to drop it in the conversation, to, like, say it. So I don't know if they thought that hashtag.
Oh, okay. Too. Yeah, maybe they're... I associate drop with, like, get rid of. But, yeah, maybe they're saying that we should start saying period more often.
This campaign is a real winner, obviously, because we can't even tell.
We can't even tell what the campaign is. It just irritates me when people are like, oh, clearly you just need to read this book by this trans activist. Like, it's just like, clearly you haven't been indoctrinated. Here, indoctrinate herself. Like, in her essay, she says, you know, like, I've read, you know, trans authors. I have trans friends. I've listened to trans people. I've also read all this other research and, like, read what women are writing and read, you know, like, what sex researchers and doctors are saying. And I have my own experience. Like, this is how you form an opinion, by reading and listening and learning and studying. It's not like, oh, well, you've shown us all that you've really spent a long time trying to work this out, and this is the conclusion that you came to. Educate yourself. Like, it's like, you educate yourself.
I going to say? I've lost it. Sorry.
Okay, that's okay. Well, no, so we need to get through all these people who've been fired this week.
Okay,
so the main one was JK Rowling. That's the big conversation. But there's a bunch of other people. Like, cancel culture is gone completely crazy. Like, it was bad enough already, but now I guess that everybody is online all the time and working online, and these lines between online and offline have absolutely disappeared. Like, they're not just blurred, they're just gone. Like, what's happening on Twitter is real life. Like, it's all the same fucking thing. Everyone is equal. Everyone has equal power. It's all connected to the politics of the day. So it's all connected to trans activism, and it's all connected to racism. Vaguely connected to racism. Like, I would say connected to the Black Lives Matter protests, but really not connected at all for the most part. So one thing that happened this week is that, I mean, some of you, unless you're Canadian, you probably haven't heard of Wendy Mesley, but Wendy Mesley has worked for the CBC, which is our public broadcaster here in Canada, for like 40 years. And she has been hosting a weekly Sunday morning talk show called The Weekly with Wendy Mesley. And this week she was suspended from hosting her talk show because in an editorial meeting, like a prep meeting, discussing the panel that she was going to do on her show, she quoted a journalist who was going to be on the panel who said the N-word. And the diversity,
like what was around the quote,
or nobody knows what the quote is. It's not been reported by the media. It's not anywhere. Even the word that she said wasn't reported, but I've looked around online enough to, I mean, you would assume that's what it is, but also I looked around online enough to find that confirmed that it was the N-word, but it wasn't her word. It was, she was quoting someone else and not even on air. And they took her off the show so that they could investigate. And this is the fucking creepy ass shit that's been going on at the CBC for I don't know how long. But they have this diversity committee. I think I may have talked about this before. They have a diversity committee, which sounds creepy in and of itself. And the job of the diversity committee is basically to cancel people. Mm-hmm. So to like find people working from the CBC who like tweeted something wrong or said something wrong or had a wrong private conversation and get them fired. So everyone lives in fear, which is why the CBC sucks so bad and no one does their job. Like the CBC is like one of the most biased. This is supposed to be our public broadcaster. I mean, it's the job of journalists and journalism in general to be unbiased, but we all know, of course, that's not true. But, you know, this is the publicly funded media in Canada, and they should be representing our views and issues that are important to us. But, of course, they've refused to ever report on the gender identity issue fairly. They've never interviewed me. They've had panels to discuss me. They don't interview any other women who are critical of gender identity ideology. They just present it as this completely one-sided, done issue and promote the ideology over and over and over again and pretend as though anybody who doesn't agree is like some kind of like Nazi. But, you know, like essentially they canned Wendy Mesley, this longtime journalist, for racism when she didn't do or say anything racist because of this diversity. Like, it's just insane. And then the CBC published a story about it that had no author, which I always find odd, but whatever. And they didn't even mention, I think, in the story that it was just an editorial discussion and that it wasn't on air. Like, it's just, it's so weird and irresponsible. And I just, you know, like, I guess just fire everybody. I mean, who on the planet is going to survive this?
It's so fascinating to me because it's so clear that the way corporations are engaging in their politics is so superficial. They're literally picking up, and to be fair, corporations can only be as woke as the consumers who are pressuring them. So you've got these consumers who are jumping on like the hot button topic, which is like everyone has to talk about Black Lives Matter or everyone has to talk about trans women or women. And if this company isn't doing it, then I'm going to hound them and go after them. And I'm going to find all their employees that don't agree and we're going to get them fired. And so companies are engaging in this really superficial, it's a veneer of ethics to say like, well, we fired that person. We fired the person that said that the N-word during a meeting where it was part of a quote. We've fired someone who didn't use the right pronouns. They're all fired. See, we're ethical. But, you know, in their supply chain, there's slavery, there's sweatshops, there's, you know, like funding oil or big pharma. But hey, we fired the person that said something we didn't like. So we're ethical. And this is the thing. Their engagement with ethics is so superficial and it's so pathetic and it's so vapid. But you have to understand as well that they're engaging with ethics only at the bequest of consumers who are forcing them to adopt that view. So they're not really doing ethics. They're doing PR because they're being forced into doing PR. So I mean, they're doing what they're paying customers and perhaps some shareholders are asking for.
I mean, the activists have made it so easy for them.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're not lobbying them about supply chain ethics or sweatshops, are they? They're lobbying them about say the right pronoun. That's easy. We can make everyone say the right pronoun. We put out a company-wide newsletter, say the right pronouns or you're fired. Done. Ethics, done. Boom. That's the easiest way to do ethics, is to make it about language, to make it about gentrification, to make it about people feel comfortable at work. Make sure everyone feels comfortable. Everyone's happy. You happy, Sally? Yes. Call Sally this name now. Great. Ethics is done. Like, and now we can all pretend that all this other shit that lives below the surface of what they're really doing isn't even happening, because we're doing ethics.
Well, and I mean, everybody must be living in fear at this point, because, and yeah, that's what happens when you haven't been canceled by almost every single group on the planet. Is like, I mean, that it's kind of liberating to be canceled as much as I've been canceled, because you don't really have to feel afraid, because it's like, well, who else is going to, like, you guys all think I'm terrible already, you know? Like, everybody from, like, the liberals to the trans activists to the radical feminists to the left, like, I don't know who else is going to cancel
me. Any others, Megan?
Like, I guess I can reveal the rest of my secrets, but, like, also, like, see, she is bad. It's like, yeah, you already said that.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, you know, if you're faking it, so you're pretending, like, all these companies are and all these company reps to be like this perfectly progressive person who repeats like Black Lives Matter and trans women are women and all the slogans mm-hmm. that you're supposed to say and posting mm-hmm. the right things on social media. I mean, you must be living in terror,
right,
that the real you is going to come out.
Right.
Because, I mean, this is all phony. And I'm not saying people don't genuinely believe that Black Lives Matter or care about trans rights, but it's just that, like, you've just not spent your life saying perfect things and being, like, a perfect, like, you're not, like, a PR firm. You have normal conversations with normal people and, like, you know, you probably have inappropriate beliefs and you're probably just like a regular human being, just like
right.
everybody else.
Complicated. I was thinking about that in terms of the cancellation thing. I feel like one of the things that's going to become important for people now off the back of all of this stuff that's happening around cancel culture is that you really want to now be looking for and choosing employers who are going to support your right to have diverse viewpoints. Like, you want to find an employer that you can be safe to have any kind of politics with. And I don't mean conservative employers, because I know a lot of like racist piece of shit conservative companies that I would never want to work for in a million years. But at the same time, I would feel just as hamstrung going into a super progressive left-leaning corporation who's going to force me into a certain type of speech and a certain type of belief system. So I'm like, for me, it's fundamental to find companies and people you can work with and for who will support that diversity of opinion. It's not, for me, it's no longer about like diversity, and a lot of companies do diversity as like, we hire a Black woman, we did diversity, or we force you all to put pronouns in your signature on your email, we did diversity. But like, diversity as in allowing people to actually hold the belief systems they have, which are often
diversity of thought and
yeah.
experience. And
the crazy thing is, that's often tied to our ethnic background, and that's often tied to our like family and cultural or racial history. But we're like erasing it. We're going to erase it and enforce progressivism, and it's somehow going to make the world a more accepting and tolerant and peaceful place to live in. Like, what the fuck are you people thinking? I don't know. I do know that when I see people engaging this kind of behavior, I get the sense that they really feel like they're doing something. You know, they're doing something, they're calling someone out. And I've noticed the trend is that, you know, like the more you engage in that, you're creating a culture of fear, not just in the world, but in your own life. And that's why you have to keep re-canceling people, because the only way to stay safe is to make someone else unsafe. And so there was like that example you had of that Charles something or other. And so like, He got cancelled, but so now he's like cancelling people. So he's cancelling people so that he can be uncancelled.
Charles Clymer is like, the worst person in the entire world. What is his name now? Charlotte
Clymer. So cancelling other people so that I can get uncancelled. So we're always trying to like find someone else to kind of stand on so that we can get a sense of safety. And it's like, do you realize that you're creating the lack of safety? Like your kind of obsession with forcing people to adopt your viewpoint is of course making them feel unsafe and you feel unsafe. And it's a self-perpetuating cycle that no one is allowed to think what they think anymore. So we're all canceling each other and all of us are going to feel inherently more anxious and insecure, and we're going to have more work insecurity. We're already dealing with COVID work insecurities. Now everyone's going to lose their job for saying something wrong. And then we're going to say, well, it's the government's fault because they didn't fucking whatever. Like, you know, we're doing this to ourselves too in some ways.
It's funny because I was thinking about that safety thing this week because the other person I wanted to talk about in our parade of firings was Kathleen Lowry. I actually just realized I don't even know if I'm pronouncing her name, which is properly. I just talked to her today and she's been working at the University of Alberta for about 15 years now. So, and she is in the anthropology department, and was fired from her role as associate chair of undergraduate programs in the Department of Anthropology. And they wouldn't tell her why, but it's essentially because she's gender critical. And,
What was the thing? What did she do? Like anything or?
Well, she wrote an article for Feminist Current last year. And she also, she's been for some time, she's been posting little quotes and things on her office door. So she had a quote from Magdalene Burns. I lost your sound. You muted yourself, Laura.
So it's always in the background. I'm just going to mute. So keep going.
Partying at your apartment. I think what happened is that some students on campus caught wind. They weren't students in her classes, so it wasn't people complaining about her classes that she was, saying offensive things in class or anything like that. It's just that some students on campus caught wind that there was like a TERF professor and wanted to get rid of her, so caused a stink about the whole thing. And they asked her to resign from her position, and she refused because she was like, I haven't done anything wrong. I haven't said anything offensive or hateful. So you're going to have to fire me from this role. So they did. But, what I was thinking, because, their excuse is, of course, that they're trying to, create a safe atmosphere for students, like a safe campus culture. But the actual effect is that it makes it very unsafe, because I'm sure that there's plenty of students on campus and profs and instructors and administrators who think the things that Kathleen is saying and feel deathly afraid to say them, especially now when they know that you're going to get fucking fired if you say them. Like, that's what creates like an unsafe atmosphere for people. Everyone's living like, cancel culture doesn't keep anyone safe. It keeps everyone living in fear. These attempts to create like these safe spaces just makes everyone on edge all the time and fearful of saying what they really think and of being themselves is terrible. Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing is they're pitting it, or at least it seems to me to be presented in the media as like we're doing this to support and protect gender diverse students. And all of these gender diverse students are benefiting so much from all of the hard work we're doing in making this a safe place for them. But it's like, not really, because if they had opinions that go against the acceptable way of thinking, they're also at risk. Like, being gender diverse doesn't make you safe from being cancelled. It kind of means like, your opinion might be given a little bit more leeway. But I think if you still engage in wrong think or wrong speak, you'll still be up for being cancelled. So who are they making safe? They're making safe people who think one particular way about the world.
I wonder, I think that who they're making safe is probably the people who are making six figures.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's probably, like, the people who are really high up at these institutions who are protecting their positions. Like, I think that's what they're keeping safe.
Like I said before, one of the things that these very superficial kind of performative displays of corporate ethics is doing is making it much easier for corporations to pretend they're engaging in ethics and kind of whitewashing over how many unethical things they're doing in the background, like how many unethical business deals and where they're involved in corruption. And corporate social responsibility has always had a degree of this, you know, corporations that were corrupt, bribing officials, even engaged in civil unrest, and then would be like, oh, but we planted trees. And now they're doing the same thing where it's like they're not cleaning up their behavior. They're not being more ethical. They're not kind of going beyond the shareholder model. They're just doing the same old business as usual. And they're saying, but we care about LGBT, so you can't stop us. And yeah, the people at the top are benefiting. The shareholders, the executives, they're safer. All the employees, people with like real lives, real thoughts, real opinions, which is everyone, is less safe. We're already moving into a gig economy where all of our jobs are less secure. Far few people have permanent positions. So all of us are already dealing with the kind of financial insecurity of the gig economy. Now we're dealing with the financial insecurity of the thought police. So we're kind of layering all of these issues one upon each other. And I don't know who we're meant to be protecting, but we're certainly only protecting the status quo as far as I can see. No corporation is really changing. Putting pronouns in your signature, they haven't changed anything. They've looked good and their execs will keep doing exactly what they've done. And they can, and that's why a lot of the shit we're seeing now is like they've pretended they're engaging with Black Lives Matter whilst they're passing policy to, you know, cut wages or to, you know, outsource to a less ethical country or to, you know, make their supply chain even shittier than it already is. We're not improving anything.
Well, and I'm afraid that I think that these activists have, like I said earlier, made it really easy for corporations to lend their support because they aren't really saying anything radical. And this is why we talked about this last week. This is why nobody talks about class or poverty. Mm-hmm. Because if we were to talk about class or poverty, then these corporations could not join in. You know, Instagram couldn't sign on, Twitter could not sign on, Nike could not sign on, The Body Shop could not sign on, Warner Brothers could not sign on, Bravo could not sign on and be like, we're doing the right thing and we're standing up. It's like, you're not, like, who... Like you're the man. Like, you're the man. You're not standing up to anybody. Like, and you making a statement. Like, this is why it was a stupid.
They're like, yeah, like, fuck the man. Like, no, but you are the man.
Like, the reason that people are poor is because of you and the system that you benefit from.
Yeah. Oh, but you donated a little bit of money. Oh my God. Thank you so much. Hey, I have a question about that actually.
Okay.
So people were talking about the Sun newspaper printed something about J.K. Rowling after her thing. Did you see that?
Nope. So, just pull up a Warner Brothers statement about J.K. Rowling if you'd like me to read that.
Well, someone.
Okay, so do you know about the Sun thing? I don't know.
Yeah, so someone tagged us in it on Instagram. So let me just
read
it out to you. This is the headline of Sun News today. Literally, like, it takes up the whole page. I don't know if you can see that.
Nope.
It says, I slapped J.K. and I'm not sorry. J.K. Rowling's first husband confronts her. It's like they're supporting the fact that J.K. Rowling's first husband assaulted her.
Wow. I mean, isn't that just perfect? And doesn't that just exemplify what this whole movement is about?
It really surprises me.
Like, this entire trans activist movement is about, like, misogyny and justifying violence against women.
Yeah. I mean, and that was a real shock to me, because it's like, so I'm assuming The Sun is a conservative kind of old school newspaper.
It's a tabloid.
Okay.
It's not to be trusted in terms of its journalistic ethics. I'll say that.
But it's interesting, because that's the line that a lot of progressive activists take, which is like, you should, you know, punch a turf. Okay, well, I guess you've got Sun News on your side. Congrats. Like, you're really sticking it to the man here.
Well, yeah, and I guess so they interviewed her husband, which I assume is the guy that she was talking about in her piece when she said that she was a victim of domestic abuse and that she was in an abusive marriage. Like, this is the guy. So The Sun goes and interviews him to brag to all these trans activists and all these people online who are hating on J.K. Rowling for daring to speak about women and to say that, you know, woman is a real thing. It's not a figment of your imagination. It's not an idea in your head. And, you know, I guess they're thinking people are going to cheer for her abuser. It's disgusting. That's disgusting. Mm.
And this is meant to be a political movement that is against violence against women, but it's okay if those women have the wrong opinions. Like, do you have any idea the kind of shit you're propping up? How many men are already, they're just waiting for that kind of final, yeah, it's okay to hit women. Oh, it's okay if they think wrong. Exactly. And then they can apply this to how many different ways women think wrong. Like, this is exactly their mentality. It's just wait for the woman to say or think the wrong thing, and then it's okay to be violent towards her. Like,
I'm sorry, but yeah, and the reality is that words like turf and cis and Karen and... you know, all of these words are actually being used to defend misogyny. I mean, we joke about Karen. I think it's like a little bit silly. And like, we talk about Karens like, you know, kind of like women who were middle or upper class and go around policing other people, which is a very annoying personality trait.
It is, you know,
but still, it's like these are excuses to hate women. They are excuses to hate women. And today, like, if you're a white woman, if you're a cop, if you're a Karen, if you're a TERF, if you're privileged, violence is okay because you have privilege over all these other groups that we've positioned as more marginalized, and now we're just engaged in this constant contest, the oppression Olympics, it was called in like 2010 or whatever, and it's not, there's no men and women anymore, so we can't say that the threat to women is men because men are stronger. And, you know, like, if a man punches a woman, he could knock her unconscious or even kill her, and that's not the case if a woman punches a man. You know, if a woman slaps a man across the face, nothing's going to happen. Even if she punches him in the face, it's unlikely anything's going to happen unless she's, like, really strong and really knows how to punch properly. But she's probably not going to knock him out. We just don't have that kind of strength. But, you know, like, it's everything has been warped so badly, and it feels like misogyny is not only ramped up, but it's become like a progressive position to hate women. Like, the fact that we're witnessing what's happening to J.K. Rowling, and we know this has all been happening to us for so long. It's just not, we're not famous people, so people aren't seeing it. But it's acceptable. Like, these threats against her were just so violent and so pornographic.
And it reminded me, not that I've looked through a great deal of those, but it reminded me very much of when I first started thinking and speaking critically about pornography and the kind of immediate backlash, which was very sexist and very overtly misogynistic. But the interesting thing is, women will be characterized as Karens for, like, those dumb bitches, Karens. But it's got that inherent speak to the manager thing about it, which is like Karens are always demanding to speak to your manager. And it's like, yeah, but cancel culture is literally people asking to speak to your manager because you thought the wrong thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're being the Karen here.
That was the best commentary of all time, Tim Pool's tweet, which said that cancel culture is Karen culture. And it literally is. Literally. All of these people who are all very privileged people, these people on Twitter going around canceling everybody else, these people on the diversity committee at the CBC, these are not very oppressed, marginalized people. These are not the immigrants. These are not the people living in poverty. These are not people living on the res. Like, these people going around policing everybody else and enforcing these new rules, their new, this religious doctrine that they're imposing on everyone else and going to announce to the manager that this person should be fired because they broke the rules. Like, you're the fucking Karens.
That is exactly what Karen does. She goes to your manager and she's like, they offended me because they didn't do their job properly. Like, you're doing that.
Well, they did their jobs properly. They just said a word that you're not allowed to say, or somebody went through their DMs and they found their texts that are just like the same as all of our texts. I mean, like, can you imagine if somebody read through all your texts?
No, like, that's the thing. And that's why I'm like, I'm never going to play the game. Like, I don't speak correctly. I never will. I have no interest in it. So I'm never going to. And that's why I said at the start, this thing with justifying, arguing, defending, and explaining. Like, J.K. Rowling, it sounds like she wrote a great letter. But you don't have to justify, argue, or defend and explain your position when you know you are grounded in an ethical way of looking at the world. You don't have to. Why justify something that you know to be true?
There's no justification. I mean, her essay I didn't think was actually very defensive. Her tweets were defensive, which I found like mildly irritating. But her essay was more just like articulating her position and her analysis and her experience, which I thought was good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still more like nicey than I think is necessary. But you know, just because women are supposed to be nice and polite and love everybody,
we're supposed to be agreeable. That's what our brains tell us to do. So how dare you not conform?
I mean, and so speaking before we move to Patreon only, which we have to do in 1 minute. And I think I actually got the correct link down below in the show notes so that we can move to our Patreon only live stream. I've been having trouble getting the link right for a few weeks. Been having trouble remembering to say the name of the show and my own name, and also posting the correct link, which I know it doesn't sound very complicated, but I guess this is beyond me.
It's complicated.
Somebody else tried to cancel Allison Roman for the third time this week.
Oh, poor Allison. She's really had a run.
I know, but her problem is what we're talking about, which is like, stop apologizing. Do not apologize. She never did anything wrong in the first place, as we already established in previous episodes, that what she said about Chrissy Teigen was legit. And
hey, I just tell you one thing I remembered, and I wish I said it at the time. Chrissy Teigen once tweeted and got called out for, she joked that, like, her mom uses AirPods, you know, those ones without the cord, whatever the fuck they're called, AirPods. She's like, haha, my mom thinks AirPods are, like, disposable. She just throws them out. And then had to delete it and apologize for the fact that most people can't afford fucking AirPods,
let alone
daily. She just like uses a pair a day and just like chucks them. That's how rich they are. But anyway, tell us about how Chrissy Teigen is oppressed.
So, okay, but so what happened this week? I mean, this just, to me, it's just cancel culture gone amok, which is the headline that's been written many, many times. But also, it's like, It's like, stop apologizing. And it's also, we're all going to get canceled and cancel. We're all cancelable. So Yashar Ali searches through Allison Roman's fucking MySpace account. Like, MySpace account. Like, when were we on MySpace? What year was that?
In, like, 1998 or something? I don't even know.
No, I wasn't on the internet then. Maybe, like, 2005? 4? Okay, anyway. Maybe a bit later than that. But, maybe, I think I joined Facebook in, like, 2007. So, before that, I was on MySpace. Yeah. So he finds on her MySpace account a picture of her on Halloween, and he writes on Twitter, amid the uproar at Bon Appetit, a source sends me this.
Not a source, you sir. Me, a stalker.
Sends me this photo of Allison Roman dressed up as a chola from a party. Note her hoop earrings, fake tattoo on her chest, and her makeup. Unclear when this photo was taken. And I guess she was dressed up as Amy Winehouse.
What's a chola?
It's like a Mexican gangbanger.
Ah, okay. Is that like an offensive word, or it's offensive to say that about someone, obviously?
No, it's like cultural appropriation, because if you're a white girl dressing up as a chola, you're dressing up as a Mexican girl.
Okay.
So, cultural appropriation. We're not allowed to do that anymore. And so many people made fun of him, thank God. People were just basically like, are you serious? Are you looking through somebody's MySpace page from like 2007? Like, get a life. And like, she wasn't in like blackface or anything like that. And so he took down the tweet, but then reposted a screenshot of the tweet, I guess for like accountability or something, and says, a lot of debate on this tweet of mine to the left. I have deleted it while keeping it here so that it can sit next to Allison Roman's tweet, because she apologized. This photo was sitting on Allison's MySpace page. You can Google it. She has a recent history of being called out for appropriation. Like, I guess because she makes foods that incorporate, like, ethnic foods. She has recipes that aren't just, like white American recipes, which is, I guess, what white people are supposed to do. Only eat, like, white bread forever. And processed cheese. But Allison Roman fucking, instead of being like, get the fuck off my MySpace page, you creep, like, she apologizes and says, this incredibly embarrassing picture was taken in 2008. I was 23 and living in San Francisco. This was my San Francisco-inspired Amy Winehouse costume for Halloween. It reads as culturally insensitive, and I was an idiot child who knew nothing about the world and how this would be perceived, and I'm sorry. And, like, I looked at that and I was like, dude, in, like, I don't know, 2007 or something, I dressed up as Amy Winehouse, but, I mean, I'm going to get re-canceled for this, I guess. I dressed up as Amy Winehouse, but dead of an overdose. Because it's Halloween, and I was very attached. I was like, you have to dress up as dead things. And I loved Amy Winehouse. I was, like, a huge Amy Winehouse fan. I still am a huge Amy Winehouse fan. And so I dressed up as her, as if she was dead of an overdose. Like, I dressed, like, it's so inappropriate. Like, and it's so offensive, and it's so upsetting considering what happened to Amy. Like, it's awful. But, like, I mean, I, like, dyed my hair black and, like, wore, like, you know, whatever. Right, and I had, like, blood coming out of my nose and, like flour around my nostril. Like, it was a very, and I was like, oh man, Yashar Ali, like, don't look through my MySpace page. Yeah. Like, you know, I just was like, yeah, everybody look through everyone's costumes from 2007 and see what they come up with. Cause I had friends who went for Halloween as like a woman who died of an abortion with like a dead fetus hanging out of their crotch. Do you know what I mean? Like, people go as like crazy shit for Halloween. And I mean, you're kind of supposed to do that on Halloween also. You're supposed to be like, look like mangled and dead and scary. Yeah, but like,
Why the fuck would she apologize for that? Why wouldn't she just say that was Amy Winehouse?
Yeah, like, this was culturally insensitive, but also I was dressed up as Amy Winehouse, and like, and even if she had been dressed up as a chola, and I know a bunch of people who dressed up as a chola in the early 2000s. I know people who dressed up as Pocahontas. There is a picture of Chrissy Teigen dressed up in an Indian, in quotations, outfit, and her partner, whose name, John Legend, is dressed up as a cowboy. Like, they went out for Halloween as cowboy and Indian, Chrissy Teigen.
Right. Like,
this is what everybody has done. Everybody has an old Halloween costume that's offensive and maybe racist. And I mean, I don't think I actually have any racist costumes, just that one offensive one. And then many, many Halloweens with me dressed up as like an old timey prostitute or a burlesque dancer so that I can go out in my underwear and a boa.
Oh shit. Like, that's amazing.
Everybody post all of their Halloween costume photos on the internet, and then we can just all stop this shit.
Yeah, let's just all acknowledge all the things we think and have potentially said privately that could ever offend any human being in the whole world. Let's just get it all out there. Maybe it's going to be like a confessional. What was that religion you said that this is like? It's like that religious practice where you have to like continually repent and like you never get there. You're just always guilty, guilty, guilty. Right. And you're always repenting and you're always like, confessing.
Yeah, yeah. You're always kind of begging for forgiveness. And it just like never ends. I mean, I kind of do think we should all just like, I mean, maybe it would be helpful for us to just all spill our secrets onto the internet so no one can cancel. Like, tell us every bad thing you ever did, all the drugs that you've ever done, everybody that you've, like, fucked in inappropriate places, every shitty Halloween costume, every mean thing that you've said about anybody over text.
No shit. Also, I guess the thing is when you cancel someone or when you engage in this kind of policing behavior, there's an inference that you've done better than them, and it's like, for sure, all the people jumping on these bandwagons don't have like a clean bill of always being perfect. Like, if that's the whole fucking point of being human is to fuck up, like, what are we even? For sure, there's certain things that you don't like. You don't go down the, you don't become a fucking Nazi. Okay, we can all agree on that. But like, people fuck up. People say dumb shit all the time, all fucking day. That's the whole point. Like,
and it's not even just fucking up. Like, yeah, people fuck up all, like, there's tons of things that I've said in the past that I do regret saying, but also like some things I don't regret saying, but they're not politically correct things. They're just kind of like true things or mean, like the, you know, people talk shit. Like, come on.
These people must like, be real fun real. At parties. Like,
yeah, like, do you have any friends? Like, is that painful? Mm. Like, are you fake around your friends too? Because that's, that would be terrible.
That's probably why they're on MySpace going through photos from 2004, because they don't have anyone to hang out with. There's probably a reason that they're running cancel culture.
Okay, so we're at 10:40 p.m. here in Vancouver, right. In any case, not in New Zealand or Toronto.
Time.
So we're moving to Patreon only, you guys. So we'll continue this conversation, and we usually talk about more personal things. We can answer some of your questions. I think there was some comments on Patreon that we can get to.
Yeah.
So the link's down below. Also, I would really appreciate if people would sign up on Patreon to support this show. It is work, despite the fact that maybe it seems like we're not doing any work at all.
A lot of admin. Also, you have to hit subscribe. It's very important for YouTube that everyone subscribes for some reason.
Oh, okay. Thank you. I don't think I've ever said that ever. Appreciate that reminder. So please subscribe to the channel. Please sign up for Patreon. We're here every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Pacific time. And was there anything else that we needed to say? I'm Megan Murphy.
I'm Laura McNally. This is The Same Drugs. We will uncancel you. Come to us.
Everyone's uncancelled.
Yeah. You're safe here. This is a true safe space.
Okay. Thanks, everyone.
All right. See you on Patreon. Bye.